3-1, and a high fly ball hit to left. Winker barely has to move. Side retire. Minaya gets a king-sized out to finish off the bottom of the seventh. 1-0 New York.
All right, we're back, and the big story, I think the big story for a while, and he's just starting to get recognition, not here at the Talking Mets podcast, certainly for not those who are subscribers to Be On The Mic, as we've talked a little bit about the emergence of Minaya and a couple of pieces at the site. If you're not a subscriber, you should be. Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. Check it out, as you could get Mets content in between Sunday to Sunday, when I'm not in front of the mic all the time. But Sean Minaya, I think it's important to talk about him because this week he was a big part of the Mets finishing 7-3 on this road trip. And really his performances, throughout the trip, since he's, the second half of the year, I mean, Minaya has just been everything you could ask from the signing. I mean, maybe the best signing that Stearns had all offseason. I mean, Severino's been a nice signing, 1 year, $15 million, and nobody got excited about him. But Minaya, a little bit later in the offseason, a 2-year deal, a player opt-out. Minaya certainly, with the way he's performed, is going to opt out. I believe Boris is his agent, too. So that makes it more likely, too. Mets are going to have a lot of Boris connections with Alonso and Minaya this offseason. Yep, he's the Boris Corp, but just check that out. So when you look at Sean Minaya now and what he's accomplished, pitching well, pitching well right before the road trip, I guess, as in a game the Mets would beat the Orioles, and then of course what he did against Arizona, and then to round out the trip with the White Sox with his performance. But ever since pretty much June 1st, Minaya is a top 30 pitcher in baseball. If you look at his performance this year, as he's evolved, he's had every bit the year of a Luis Castillo or a Max Fried, which funny is Max Fried is going out into the free agent market as well, and it'll be curious the value that he will get, because he's been a top of the rotation guy for a team that's won a pennant in the Braves, lefty. Minaya is a little bit older, he's 32 years old, so he's entering his late prime. But you have to think that Minaya has pitched himself into a similar deal to what Rodriguez got with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Maybe a 4-year, $80 million deal, maybe $20 to $22 million a year. Right now, one of the suggestions I made over at Beyond the Mic is the Mets ask Minaya to opt into his player option for next year at about $14.5 million and then tack on another 3 years and make the total $80 million. So essentially, he'll be getting $66 million over 3 years, $22 a year on the extension. I think that'd be a nice amount. That'd bring him to age, 35, 36 years old. And look, the Mets, it's a perfect timing. We've talked about this a lot. The Mets were built on pitching throughout most of the decades of the 10s. They went to the World Series based on pitching. And let's face it, they didn't want to do the rebuild, and guys like me were not advocating for a rebuild because of names like Harvey and DeGrom and Syndergaard and Matz and Wheeler. And you knew how special it was to have the caliber of pitching, even though they weren't always healthy or elite at the same time. From about 2015 to when DeGrom left right after the 2022 season, the Mets starting pitching, and I'll throw the COVID season out because it was a mess, they're starting pitching, but that, again, I don't consider that a real situation. The Mets' starting rotation was always pretty solid. Now, a lot of that had to do with the excellence and the dominance of DeGrom, but to a certain extent, all of them, even before his decline, that includes Harvey, contributed to an elite-ish rotation, rotation that went deep into the games, didn't walk a lot of batters, was able to pitch big when they need it. A lot of what undid the Mets throughout their tenure was bad bullpen and an offense that, because of the lack of resources the Wilpons had, an offense that the Mets couldn't invest in with component players. So the evolution here in the middle of the season, ever since he went, I guess, last year to Driveline, he's been building this up, building up his velocity, changing his repertoire away from a fastball pitcher to, maybe more of a sinker slider situation. You saw he was throwing the sinkers today, majority sinkers, even when he didn't necessarily have the command or control of it at this point. But if the Mets can be, I mean, basically luck themselves out with a signing into a top-of-the-rotation type of pitcher, even if he's not a number one, he's somewhere like a 2.5. That's where he's going to settle in. I mean, this is huge. I mean, think about it. It takes the pressure off of a Christian Scott, a Brandon Sproat. It allows the Mets, if they don't go into the deep end of the pool for maybe a Corbin Burns or a Blake Snell. That's a conversation. I don't want to get into that in the middle of a pennant race. That's a conversation for the offseason. I mean, they could potentially run back Manaea, maybe get Severino on a reasonable deal. They'll have Christian Scott. They'll have Peterson still. They may have Brandon Sproat. I mean, obviously, McGill, there's a lot to prove there. I mean, I'm not convinced, even though he looked okay. I think a lot of how he looked and how solid he looked on Friday was because it was the White Sox, but we'll see. You'll have McGill into that conversation. And then who knows with some of the other young arms in the organization where they pan out. But this could be huge, and you could be getting Manaea in a situation where he's figured everything out. I mean, very rarely at age 32 do you get the pitcher that's the best version of himself. And we've seen this before with other guys. You know, we talked about it, how Paul Blackburn coming over, maybe with the resources of the Mets versus Oakland, where maybe they could unlock something in him, brought up guys like Charlie Morton, who all of a sudden go to Houston, and the Astros have plenty of these guys. Look at Kikuchi now, who's always had talent, but was up and down with the Blue Jays. He goes to the Astros, and all of a sudden they unlock the best version of himself. Could the Mets, with their resources, their pitching lab, you know, hopefully with the kind of money they're investing in player development coaching, could they be unlocking the best version of players? Now, Manaea, it seems like since he just basically looked at Chris Sale and said, let me lower my arm angle. I mean, the it's there. You just go to advanced metrics. You could see the arm angle has dropped precipitously since that game. Was it as simple as that? And then you ask yourself, well, is it as simple as that? You know, where are the Mets coaches? I think a lot of times when players evolve, coaching's important, and it's critically important, but it's the player doing the work, understanding their body, understanding what they can and can't do. Not everybody could just drop their arm angle down like Manaea did mid-season and all of a sudden have an aha moment and it all clicks. It just doesn't happen like that for every pitcher. Every pitcher's not capable. You know, it's just like everybody made a big deal about McGill and the American Spork. I mean, not everybody could throw a ghost fork like Kodai Senga and be successful and command and control it. But, you know, to me, there's been a lot of big stories on this Mets team this year. I mean, I think Mark Vientos is one of the best stories that they've had all year. But Sean Manaea is right there at maybe 1A. And this, I mean, could you remember a better pitching signing that the Mets have had in recent history? I mean, think about it. Michael Wacha has done well, but not with the Mets. Rick Porcello, he flamed out. Marcus Stroman was an acquisition. He was okay. Chris Bassett was acquired, let's put it that way. But then you have like Taijuan Walker. He was okay, but he wasn't this good. I mean, he had a couple of stretches, though, where he was an all-star, maybe for half a season. Carlos Carrasco, eh. I mean, just think about it. I mean, Quintana's been okay. I mean, nobody, I mean, with the what they paid for and what they're getting, it's just incredible. And I think it's important. And I don't think Boris will sign ahead of time. But if I were the Mets, and I know that a lot of pitchers, when they're on a hot streak, they don't want to start talking contract and getting into numbers and everything. But I would call Boris and say, hey, is there a pathway for us to getting Sean locked up, getting him locked into that player option so they could have some breathing room on the payroll? If they want to go out and do something big with Soto or Burns or something like that, and then give him his due and his worth with 3 years tacked on an extension, I think that is something that the Mets should really think about, to be quite honest. But can you think of a bigger development that will help the Mets make the playoffs than having a legit ace who could go seven innings? And right now, guys like Manaea and Severino, and even David Peterson, it's almost like it's become contagious. We haven't seen this kind of harmony in the rotation since the early days of Scherzer and Bassett with McGill and the coffee clutch they used to have in the dugout, where all these guys, you know, start after start are starting to feed off each other. I know Peterson's peripherals are not quite as impressive as maybe a Manaea, who seems to be a bit more sustainable about what he's doing. But look, you know, I've talked about it. Sometimes it's just going out there and making a good pitch and locating and throwing strikes and having the ball find one of eight fielders behind you. I mean, that really, to me, and I know that we're in a league now that emphasizes spin and stuff over command and control because, oh, ultimately they're big leaguers. That stuff will translate into outs. But ultimately, if you're not that kind of guy, if you're not a spin and stuff guy, but, you know, you could go out there and throw strikes and get people out. I mean, look, the game from its inception, from its history, has been littered with those kind of guys doing well. I mean, look at a guy like Bobby Ojeda. He didn't have overpowering stuff. I mean, later in his career, I think a guy like Frank Tanana, who turned himself into a slot ball pitcher. I think he even threw a knuckleball. You know, Jack Morris was always the debate because, you know, when the Hall of Fame came up, here's a guy that quote-unquote pitched the score. Well, sometimes he just pitched to good lineups, had to make contact, you know, won the game 7-4. Maybe the stat line didn't look great and the advanced analytics weren't pretty, but he got a win. And when he needed to pitch big, you remember the historic Game 7 in 1991, he pitched big. So sometimes it's as simple as that light bulb going off and just throwing strikes. I mean, look, the last two nights, Quintana, and I know this lineups that they were facing with the White Sox are about as bad as they're going to get. But they just went out and got the job done. That was it. It wasn't anything more than that. And sometimes that's what really good pitchers do. They go out, they give you innings, they get the job done. And going into September, I think especially because as you look at Quintana and you don't know what Blackburn's status is going to be, I know he's making a rehab start on Tuesday, and McGill is always a magic eight ball. You've got Peterson, you've got Severino, and you've got Manaea. And right now, the Mets are relying on those three guys to not only give them quality starts, but also pitch a little bit deeper to help them bridge the gap with that bullpen, to keep that bullpen fresh, especially a bullpen right now that does not have Daniel Nunez. Buto has evolved into this, all right, we're only going to pitch him 2 out of every 5 days. We'll make him go multiple innings to maximize his use, to where Mendoza's now looking at pitching him in short stints because they've moved past the stretching him out phase where maybe he could still be a starter. But that's really part of September. Part of September is going to be, can that big three, and I know you're probably laughing because it ain't exactly Smoltz, Maddox, and Glavine, but Severino, Manaea, and Peterson, and Peterson's probably even more unlikely than Manaea. He might be, I should put him in. When it's all said and done, we talk about great stories this year. He's part of it. But, you know, that's what the Mets have. The formula hasn't changed. Go 6 innings, allow 2 to 3 runs, hand it off to get about 6 to 8 outs from the bullpen, and ultimately your elite, highly paid, historically paid closer needs to get the job done. That's as simple as that. He needs to get the job done. So anyway, that's where we're at. Sean Manaea, incredible performance. Maybe the best pickup of the offseason, anchoring the staff, setting the tone. Let's see how Severino and Peterson can, you know, take the ball and do their thing. Because right now, if we could start seeing those three guys get into the seventh inning on the days they pitch, give you 7 innings, 2 or 3 runs, it puts the Mets in such a good position to not rely on their middle inning relievers as much, keep them rested, maybe spot them in opportunities where they can be successful, and hand them ball to Diaz to get the final 3 outs. I mean, because whether you like it or not, whether he agitates you or not, Diaz is going to be your closer. And he's going to be your closer for a while, maybe for another 4 years. That's another conversation for another day. So, all right, let's take a quick break. Wrap up on the way out. Francisco Alvarez, lost in the dark forest. Does he still have value? Or should we see more Luis Torrens perhaps starting? You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. We're back with more right after this.